moving along. Want to welcome all of you here. We'd like to start with each member of the RAC to introduce themselves. Start over here with Dan first.
Dan Potts, representing non-consumptive interests.
Chris Schmitz, non-consumptive.
Jacobs Tool, Goshute Tribe.
Ron Camp, sportsman.
Matt Clark, sportsman.
Chris Marble, at large.
George Garcia, Forest Service.
Carl Hurst, sportsman.
Ben Louder, at large.
Ken Strong, sportsman.
Mike Gates, Bureau of Land Management.
Okay. We'd like to excuse Larry Fitzgerald and Greg McPhee. They won't be here tonight. We don't have any of the board members here. They're probably all eating someplace.
They had a long day.
A long day today. Appreciate all of you being here. Just want to remind everybody this is a public forum. We appreciate you coming here for those that want to express their opinions. If you have a card, we'd like to have you fill out a card if you'd like to comment on any of the proposal be put forth and get that up to us, and we'll be giving you a time. What we'll do is we'll start out, we'll have a proposal or a presentation by the division, and then we'll bring it to the RAC for any questions, question period, and then we'll take it to the audience for any questions they might have on the proposal. We'll close that period once that's done, and then we'll take any comments from the public, and then we'll bring it back to the RAC members for their discussion and what they'd like to do. So we'll go ahead with that. Scott, who have we got up? Oh, we got to do a board update.
You can do that.
Okay. You want to do it or you want me to do it?
You do your your update and then I'll do mine.
Okay. Had a wildlife board meeting today, pretty long, went over a lot of important issues. I'll just go over as quickly and simply as I can. Under waterfowl recommendations, that was passed by a unanimous vote. There was an issue concerning Gunnison Bend Reservoir and a buffer zone that had been drawn around that, 600 feet. That was voted to be removed, and it'll be the high water mark now. Gunnison Bend Reservoir is a no-shoot zone. And it's now the high water mark. Outside of that, firearms can be used. Okay, on the statewide elk management plan revisions, the only motion that I recall that was made there was to leave the Monroe unit to at the current, I think it's a 7.5 to 8.5 age bull objective, and that was 3-3, and the chairman broke that tie and voted to change that to a lower classification age objective. The bucks, bulls, and once-in-a-lifetime season dates, application timeline, etc. The only action that was taken on that was to include for antelope a boundary line that went to Black Rock. Some of you might know, be familiar with that area, but evidently there was an area that wasn't in any unit, and yet there are antelope there, and so it was actually illegal to hunt there. So they voted to change that boundary unit to include that area. So then the balance of that was voted upon, and it was unanimous. On the Southeast Region deer management plans, which we also considered here, That vote was unanimous to accept the division's proposal on that. The CWMU management plans, that was voted to unanimously to accept that, but they, at that point, they added an action log to review the rules concerning CWMUs and the once-in-a-lifetime, and also then later they also added the Landowners Association. So they're going to go through all that this next year and try to come up with a plan that is consistent, because there are some that are under the old rules, some under the new rules, and there was a pretty good discussion about that. So that's an action item log item. The on the Landowner Association permit number, the only thing they changed on that was a motion was made for Landowner Association permittee. They had recommended that there be 6 elk, and he asked for 9, and the board voted to approve his request for 9 instead of the 6.
That was on the book list.
On the book list, and that was on the book list. And then the balance of that was a unanimous vote to approve that. R657-37 CWMU rule amendments was passed unanimously. The conservation permit season variance request was also voted on unanimously. That's something that they're going to work on also, to so they don't have to come back every year and ask request a variance on those season dates. Just for your information, I guess, Marty Bushman presented and talked about the Mexican Wolf Recovery Plan letter that would be sent by the board to those folks that are the federal folks that are considering that that reintroduction and how that would work.
That was supporting the governor's letter.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. And then also Marty Bushman talked concerning the process and procedure for Expo contract, and he explained that whole process and how that is actually under the auspices of the State Purchasing Department, and they have a lot of regulations and rules, how that's awarded, how that will be taken care of, so that that is done in properly. And I think everybody can rest assured that how they score that and who they recommend will be done in a way that favors no one except for those that have put in the request for proposal information to try and get that contract.
Yeah, basically, so whoever scores the highest on the based on the criteria they're using to rank those requests for proposals, most likely would get be awarded the contract. And there's also a fair amount of attention given to conflict of interest. They're going to have to declare all of that. So
he talked about the fact that that every one of the board members had to make sure that there any conflict of interest, they were clear of things, so that there would be no question as to who got that contract and undue influence in any way. So they're doing a really good job with that. Okay, with that, we'll let Dr. Fairchild give us a regional update.
This is going to be brief. We met on the 12th. A couple weeks have gone by, and I was gone for a week of that. So, Dale, give us a quick update on the work you're doing with bighorn sheep and the disease testing.
We spent the last 2 days out on the stand prairies. We captured 22 bighorn sheep. The capture company would sling the sheep back to a base camp, and we take blood samples, tonsil samples, nasal samples, take some measurements. So we're going to do a disease profile on that herd to see if they have anything and what Leslie would know more about it than I do, but type of disease that they might carry. So that will help us in the future to, if we decide to have an augmentation out there or move sheep, we know what diseases they're carrying. So we've been doing that, and then we're starting on deer, collaring, and processing the same way. 40 does out in Tooele and 20 fawns. And then after that's done, the next week they'll come in and start on the Wasatch and Manti doing the same.
And that's part of the long-term study to look at survival and production, overwintering survival.
Well, there's one thing that I'd forgotten. I know that in Iraq, for the mid-October elk hunt, okay, the board considered that, listened to all the comments about that and what we had to say about it, but they decided to go with the recommendation that the division had put forth and limited those six units on this time to see how it worked out and try to, if there's any problems, et cetera, and then they'll reconsider the extending that out to maybe the Manti or Wasatch. So,
okay. I know our law enforcement guys have been busy lately, but I can't tell you what they were doing. I get information every now and then where they're serving warrants and they're doing, you know, they're following up on some serious third degree felony cases as we speak, and trying to gather the evidence that they need to make those cases, and that's probably all we're going to say about that, Bruce. Just that they're busy doing serious stuff.
For now, yes.
Yeah. Scott, we got anything going outreach-wise that you want to announce to the group?
Nothing earth-shattering. You know, we're still working on coordinating some ice fishing events with state parks, aquatic fish along. I'm sure we'll have some ice fishing clinics set up with Vanya. Derek is kind of coming to the slow season for dedicated hunter projects and such, and he's been focusing on working with shooting ranges. Little media work for me here. Nothing really too important to mention. But okay. Probably a little annual leave.
So. We'll mention that many of you probably heard in the news of an oil spill in Provo Canyon, our involvement early on was kind of interrupted by the fact that the canyon was closed, and our officer really couldn't get up there to do an assessment. We have since done an assessment, and Division of Water Quality helped out quite a bit on that. We have not. There's been no observable fish loss or impact to the fishery that we're aware of. But if that changes, we'll certainly make everybody aware of that. But as of now, that oil comes out of the basin like wax, and they've got to probably heat it to get it in their tankers. But as soon as it hit that cold drain, it pretty much congealed. And so when it got into the river, there wasn't the mixing that you would get with a fine, liquid. So that was a plus, and that made it a little easier to clean up. So other than that, I think that's probably it. Our fisheries right now, this is their analyze data and do reports time of year. Not a lot of exciting things going on, except when you get an oil spill. So that's it.
Okay, yeah, a couple of things I failed to do. Needed to have a motion on approval of the agenda and last meeting.
Make the motion.
Okay, Dan, make the motion on the approval of the agenda and the meetings of last.
And the minutes.
Okay. I have a second? Ken? All in favor? Any opposed? Okay, vote looks unanimous. Sorry about that. Okay, well, I think we can move into the...
I got this next one.
You got it?
I was thinking I had to do it.
No, I'm not even going to go to the slides.
I'll put them up for you if you want.
Well, put them up then.
All right.
This is, you know, we got to do diligence here, but this is one of those no-brainers, and I'll just preface it with that. Currently, the way the rule reads, if you interpret it correctly, if you're red, you know, if you're selling lobster, and you've got them in an aquarium there, and they've got the little rubber bands around them ready to go, you know, in the pot, you're supposed to have a COR. This is an adjustment to the rule that says if it's for commercial use, there's no need for a COR. So, current rule requires certificate of registration to possess live aquatic animals for commercial use. This includes live fish and crustaceans held in tanks for human consumption at restaurants, grocery stores, specialty markets. Neither the Department of Agriculture nor Utah Division of Wildlife desire to govern or control these types of activities within reason. In order to exempt live aquatic animal tanks, restaurants, and stores from the COR process, a definition is needed to separate species of concern from those that do not need regulatory oversight. So here's the gist of it. Marine aquatic animals, COR not required, provided they spend its entire life cycle in the marine environment, not a species classified as invasive or nuisance by state or federal law, used for immediate human consumption within 30 days, obtained legally, and not released live. And thank you.
Okay.
So we just saved somebody, what, an hour one way?
Okay. Any questions from the RAC on the presentation?
John's giving mine.
Okay, anything from the public, the audience? Any comments from the audience? Okay. Any discussion from the RAC? What are you... Okay, Chris?
I'll make a motion to accept the R657-3 rule amendments as proposed.
Okay. Okay. And Amanda told me you have to speak into the mic.
Okay.
Okay.
Can't hear you in the recording.
Okay.
I'm picking it up even though you're not, but yeah, please speak into the
mic. Okay.
Sometimes it's distant.
Do you need me to do that anymore?
No, I got that part.
Right. Okay, we have a motion accept and a second to accept the...
I
proposal.
Second it.
Okay. All right. All in favor of the motion?
No.
Any opposed? Okay. Votes unanimous. Okay. Good. Okay. Let's go. Item number 6. Leslie, you're up. Black Bear.
You saying something there? Alrighty. So just a little bit of background. We have a 12-year management plan that was approved for black bears in 2011. The plan is good for until 2023, so it's a 12-year plan. There was a group that was assembled to help put together and make recommendations for the plan. It was the Utah Black Bear Advisory Committee, and it consisted of several different representatives from several different agencies, non-consumptive groups and sportsmen's groups and houndsmen, as well as division representatives. The plan requires that the division recommend permits every 3 years. And if you remember right, I came and recommended permits last year, and technically I should not be recommending them for another 2 years. However, we made several different changes that were quite drastic to our season structures, weapon types, all of that type of thing. And so we committed to reviewing our recommendations until we feel comfortable that we're not going to over-harvest or hurt bear populations and that type of thing. So we're going to go back to an annual recommendation process on bears until we feel comfortable with what we've got. So everything that we're recommending tonight is in accordance with the Utah Black Bear Management Plan, except for we're doing it on an annual basis. So our plan goal is to maintain a healthy, balanced bear population with consideration for livestock depredation, nuisance and human bear conflict, habitat limitations, other wildlife species populations, population objectives, and consideration for recreational activities and opportunity for sportsmen. A healthy bear population we defined as animals is a one that maintains a proportion of breeding age animals that maintain population levels consistent with their habitat and maintain genetic variability. So within our plan, we have several different management systems that we can use to make recommendations for each of our wildlife units. And like I said, our objective is to maintain stable bear populations. But we do need to take in other wildlife populations, and again, our human-bear conflicts, our general population dynamics. So we have three harvest strategies that we use to keep bears within these levels. A light strategy is used on units where we have lower bear populations and we're trying to get older age animals in the population, so we harvest it at lower levels. We have to have no human bear conflicts or little to no human bear conflicts in those units, and we do want to have an older age structure. A moderate harvest strategy is used on units where there's only moderate levels of human-bear conflict or livestock conflict. Most of our black bear management units in Utah fall under this strategy. In these units, we want to see our harvest of females be about 30 to 40% to kind of maintain populations and keep it from growing too fast, or we don't want to be reducing it. A liberal harvest strategy is one where we have a lot of human-bear conflicts. We have a lot of livestock depredation issues. We may have habitat issues. We're trying to reduce the bear populations in these areas. In these units, we want a higher level of female harvest. So we want to see females harvest be about 40 to 45%. Our current statewide harvest level falls within the moderate level overall, with our female harvest being about 32.8% this past year, and an average adult male, and actually this is a three-year average, our average adult male greater than 5 years old is at 33%. So we fall within the moderate category. Our current status of bears, our population estimates haven't changed much from last year. What we've done, bears are a very long-lived species, and we require on all of our bears that are harvested in our state, our hunters have to bring in their carcass for it to be checked. We collect a tooth from all of those animals, and they're aged. So we know the age, we know the sex of the animal, and so that helps us estimate populations. So we've got better data than we've ever had on our bear populations. In addition to hunter harvest, anything that we, mortalities, any of the animals that we remove, we also collect the same data from. It's really hard with species, with predator species in general, because you can't do like we do with elk. You can't go fly them. You can't try and estimate using sightability factors and all of that type of thing. So you have to use your age and sex and all of that in your harvest to help estimate. In 2009, the division did some density estimates, and at that time, those density estimates kind of indicated that bear populations were about 3,500. Last year we took 15 years of the past harvest data and all of our known tooth and age, and we kind of reconstructed the population working back, knowing the known ages of those bears. And we figure more that we have a minimum of 4,100 bears in our state. Also, from that we can see that our populations are increasing annually about 5 to 6%. One thing I didn't mention here either, our bear denning data. So every year we do go into bear dens and we do look at females that have radio collars, and we look at survival of cubs, or if the dens are empty. And so monitoring these females long term gives us information on production and survival for the population. And we've got bears across the state, so we kind of get a little bit of a statewide perspective. So last year, when we came and made recommendations, we increased our permits quite dramatically. Part of the reason that we did that is that we had the highest record number of nuisance bear takes. We had a record number of nuisance bear takes between our agency and Wildlife Services. We removed 95 bears. That's the most we've ever had to respond on. And so we, knowing that we've got an increasing bear population, we felt that we needed to do some things to kind of bring the bear population back under into a specific down back down to levels where nuisance problems can be tolerated better. So when we made our recommendations, we wanted to see an increase in sport harvest of 20%, which would account for so last year sport hunters harvested 280 bears. Total take of bears last year was 338. We wanted to see that sport take go up to 330 and the division take go down. And I will say that we successfully did that. We reversed the trend and we took an increased sport harvest and reduced what the division or Wildlife Services took. And so that was our overall goal with our changes that we implemented this last year. Our average statewide success rate is usually between 42 to 45%. Last year, the harvest rate was 50%, or in 2014. In 2015, the harvest rate was 47%. So our harvest success rate was a little lower than the previous year, but overall harvest was higher, if that makes sense. In 2014, our sport harvest, like I said, was 283, but the total harvest was 378. This year, our total, the current season that just ended, our sport harvest was 325, so you see that big increase in sport take, and our total harvest was 370, so 8 less than last year, but the majority of harvest was done by sportsmen. So you can see here, this is just a graph to kind of show you the number of permits that were issued. So the line with the triangles, you can see that we had quite a dramatic increase in the number of permits. That's what that line represents with the triangles. That's the number of permits that we offered or recommended. The one thing that I do want to point out, though, that steep increase between 2013 and 14, even though we increased a lot, it's important to remember that we increased a lot in hunts that are not as successful, so spot and stock and some of those types of things. So even though that increase was huge, it was lower success hunts that took the majority of those. The other thing to note here, too, if you look at the line, the bars on the bottom, the light gray take is sport harvest take. The dark gray portion is depredation and nuisance take. And you can see in 2014 how great the distance is, how many bears that the Division of Wildlife Services took. But if you compare that to this last season, that shrunk quite a bit and sport harvest went up. So just one more representation of depredation and nuisance. This In 2014, the Division of Wildlife Services removed 95 bears. This past year, we reduced that back down to 45 bears, which is within historical normal trend for how many bears the division typically removes. We would like to see that number continue to decrease and try and use sportsmen again to help us regulate this so that we're not the ones removing bears and that our sportsmen are doing this. The other thing that we're not exactly sure of is it could be the blip in nuisance could be due to lower food crop and all of that. So we want to continue with what we're doing to see if that it wasn't just a one-year anomaly. So again, I'll get into a discussion of the season structures right now. So last year, if you remember, we used to have one spring season, and that involved both hounds and bait. So you could do either method, and the season ran, I can't remember exactly the dates that it used to run, but we added an extra week onto the end of the season here and limited the spring season to hounds only. Or you could do spot and stalk, but we didn't allow bait hunting during this time period. The percent permits filled this past year during this season was at 49%. So that's not a success rate. That's the number of percent, the percent of the permits offered here that were filled, because we don't survey. We didn't survey to find out who actually hunted and who didn't. So it's not a percent success. So we're recommending the same season structure again. So a spring season that will run April 2nd to June 3rd. With that extra additional week into the first week of June. And then we're going to continue to recommend a summer limited entry season. During this season, hounds cannot be used. You can do bait or spot and stalk. Primarily the reason that we don't allow hounds is this is the prime season for fawning and calving, and it's really hard on those species to have hounds out during that time period. We will recommend the additional week on the front of the season for baiting, so you can begin baiting a week prior to the season, but you can't begin hunting until the season opens on June 4th. I will say that there were some complaints this past year over that 1 week overlap. Primarily it had to do with there were a couple of complaints that hounds were running off of bait, or that people intentionally hunted over bait during this time period. I think it's minimal, though. I mean, it's a 1 week period. It did resolve some access issues. During that time of year, the weather's really good. People can get through roads and that are typically closed earlier in the season. The percent of the permits that were filled during this season was 62%. The other thing I should mention there, too, is that we made a change last year that allowed people to use any weapon, including rifles, over bait, which wasn't allowed previously. You could only use archery tackle over bait. We're going to continue to recommend a fall limited entry archery only bait only season. This is primarily, it's only on the book cliffs. The season dates for this would be August 8th to September 9th. The weapon type is limited to archery tackle only, or you could bait, you can use bait, or you could spot and stalk if you chose to do that. They can, now one of the things that we ran into last year, because we allowed the baiting to occur 1 week earlier on that summer season and did not allow it on the other seasons that allow bait, it upset quite a few people. So we're requesting to allow baiting 1 week prior to the season opening, but you can't actually begin hunting until August 8th. Again, this is only on the book cliffs. There was an error in the rack packet that I sent out, and it said percent permits filled on here was 0%. It actually was 40% for the permits that were offered last year. So I need to mention that. We made no changes to the fall limited entry season, so we're recommending the fall season stay the same, August 20th to September 26th, and then it opens again October 29th to November 17th. The percent permits filled during the season is at 41%, and again, if you use bait during the season, we're going to allow you to, we're recommending that you be allowed to begin baiting 1 week prior to the season opening. And then on the fall spot and stock on the LaSalle and San Juan, the season date for that August 13th to September 9th. And the percent permits filled actually on these two seasons on these two units went down this last year. And I think it's because we increased the permits so dramatically in those two units. It was at 20%, and it dropped to 8% on the LaSalle and 4% on the San Juan. And then on the Book Cliffs Bitter Creek, the fall limited entry there, October 4th to November 17th. Okay, now I need to go back because this is wrong.
Yeah, those aren't the right dates, are they, Leslie?
No, the dates are right. What's wrong on that is...
That's not the right... San Juan, that was August through September. That's over the counter. The spot and stock's later than that.
Yeah, so this shouldn't say spot and stock. Sorry, let me fix this really quick. What this is, it's not spot and stock. I have that wrong. So the LaSalle and the San Juan, that unit, those units in particular, it takes so long for somebody to draw a limited entry elk permit with bonus points and things like that. And there have been conflicts in the past between houndsmen and limited entry elk hunters. And so on these two units, we've requested different season dates that avoid that limited entry elk period. Last year during the public process and the board process, that got changed to mirror the rest of the state on season dates. And we're asking to switch it back and avoid the limited entry elk season just on the bear hunt for those two units. So they'll go August 13th to September 9th. They'll close down during the limited entry elk, and then they'd open back up on the October 29th.
Leslie, did you just say that last year we changed the dates on those to...
Last year during the board meeting it was changed in the LaSalle and San Juan were switched to August 20th to September 26th and October 20th. They were switched to mirror the rest of the state.
I remember that coming as a recommendation from some organizations. I do not remember that actually passing. Are you sure on that?
Yeah, it did pass. And then just the same dates on Book Cliffs Bitter Creek. Sorry about the error on that. So spot and stock is actually here. That's why I was confused. But spot and stock dates, we have a spring season on the Book Cliffs Little Creek Road List, April 2nd to June 3rd, which are the same as the spring hound season. And then a fall spot and stock hunt on the Book Cliffs as well. And fall spot and stock September 10th to November 17th. And then on the LaSalle and San Juan, we'll have a season that goes October 4th to the 25th for spot and stock. The percent permits filled during this season is only at 6%. And again, if you use bait, we'll allow you to begin baiting a week early.
That's not a bait season, is it, Leslie?
Quit doing this to me. dang, and I thought I had this. Sorry. You guys are my first one, can you tell?
Yeah, we're good.
We're all right.
Okay.
It's fixed now. They're not 500 in the room.
I know. And it's all people I know. That's the worst part.
They stay small. There's no blood.
Okay. Thanks for being my test audience. Okay. So no baiting, spot and stock, you're right. I don't know why I put that there. Okay, limited entry multi-season. You can hunt any of the seasons approved for the unit for the permit is permit is authorized for. In order to use this, you have to use the appropriate weapon type and method authorized for the season being hunted. This permit cannot be used during harvest objective season or for pursuit. You have to have a pursuit permit. The percent permits filled for this season is 49%, but I can't tell you without going into much more analysis what season they actually harvested it in. I can just tell you that 49% of these permits were filled. Harvest objective, we have a couple of units. These are our moderate, or these are our heavy harvest units, the ones that we primarily have a lot of nuisance problems on, and we're trying to reduce the bear population. On these units with the harvest objective permit, anyone can go buy a permit over the counter. The unit stays open until the quota is met or the season closes. The spring season date for this is April 2nd to June 3rd, and no bait is allowed during harvest objective because there's no way that we could handle unlimited numbers of bait stations in the Forest Service and BLM, I'm sure would kill us. But so we don't allow baiting during the harvest objective season. The percent permits filled during the spring season harvest objective, 95%. On our fall season, 9 Mile, that season will run September 26th to October 28th. Spot and stock only, no bait or no hounds during this season on the 9 Mile. And the percent permits filled on that, 70%. So now let's get into regional recommendations. Most of our units were actually saying the same, exact same as last year. There are not a lot of changes. So the northern region is choosing to stay with the exact same strategies and permit numbers as last year. The northeastern region, there were a few recommended changes, primarily on the North Slope West Agate Three Corners. They're decreasing by 3 permits. And then on the Wasatch Mountains of Vinequin Current Creek, they're requesting an increase of 4. In this region, the Central Mountains Nebo, they're staying exactly the same as last year. The Wasatch Mountains West, there was a higher female take, and it requires us to go down, even though that was on a heavy strategy. So they're decreasing that one by 15. On the southeastern region, they're increasing all of their units by a small amount to deal with a lot of nuisance problems and things that they had in a lot of their units. And I won't go into each one unless you want me to. So, in the southern region, they're decreasing the beaver by 5, decreasing the Panguitch Lake Zion by 1, and then increases on the Plateau Boulder Kaparowitz and the Plateau Fish Lake Thousand Lake. Our general pursuit season will be similar to what it has been in the past, with the spring season running April 2nd to June 3rd, the summer season July 4th to August 7th, and then our fall season October 29th to November 17th. Our restricted pursuit season, we're not making any changes to that. The region wants to continue with the same strategy that we've had. And then in a couple years, we want to flip-flop. There have been some problems with nuisance bears in the region. The southeast region in particular feels that some of it may be due to pressure from summer pursuit. And so they're trying to see if you can detect differences in nuisance by maintaining lower pursuit during these seasons for a period of time and then flip-flop it and see if those levels of nuisance problems change. There is one rule change that was requested by the U.S. Forest Service. In order to have a bait station on Forest Service properties or BLM properties, we've required that you get permission, and we require this for private property as well. We require that you get written permission before you can come and get a COR from the Division of Wildlife to place a bait station. The Forest Service has had some issues, and I don't know all the details behind this, but they can't give written permission, and so they've asked for us to take that part out of our rule. And so if you're going to bait on Forest Service lands, they have said that they'll provide us with maps that indicate areas that would be closed or that they wouldn't want bait stations to be in, but they won't write permission any longer. It should make it easier to get a bait station on Forest Service lands, so, but BLM didn't request that change, so we've left that the same. So in summary, this year we're recommending a total of 705 permits. This is an increase of 14 from last year's permits that we recommended. In accordance with our changes last year, we did increase sport harvest, reduce nuisance, and depredation take by the Division and Wildlife Services. Increased permit numbers did not increase our harvest overall greatly. Increased sportsman take, but not overall bear take. The changes for permit by season this year in the spring season, we're recommending 250. This is 13 fewer less than last year. In our summer season, we're recommending 127. That's an increase of 19 in that summer season. Our fall season, we're recommending 242. This is six fewer than last year. Our multi-season is a decrease of 1, and our conservation permits an increase of 6. Thanks for bearing with me on my first one.
You did good. Before I bring it to the rack, I just wanted to remind everyone that when you come up and make comments or questions, you need to limit that to 3 minutes. You'll have 3 minutes to do that, and so we just want you to keep that in mind. Whether you're an individual or an organization, that's the way we did it. Wildlife Board did it. They were just 3 minutes, so we'll keep it at that at this point. So questions from the rack.
No, I didn't have a question, just a comment. Last time we didn't hear everybody's name, so the name and who you're representing.
Okay, yeah, just make sure you state your name and if you're representing yourself or an organization for the record.
Can I mention one thing before we go to the public thing that I forgot to? In the original packet that I sent out, in the northeastern region on the Book Cliffs, the two Book Cliffs units in particular, the northeastern region had originally recommended an increase on the Book Cliffs Bitter Creek South, and they also recommended an increase on the Book Cliffs Little Creek. I had already sent out the information, and they've since changed their mind on that recommendation, and they want to go with exactly the same that they had last year. So I forgot to mention that when we went through. I apologize.
Okay, thank you. Okay, questions from the rack.
Sure. Well, I see you've indicated that the Forest Service will not be giving permission, but will be doing maps of where it might be allowed on that.
You know, I'm not 100% sure on how it's going to work. I spoke with John Shivick on day before yesterday, and he kind of indicated that they would provide maps, and I said that it'd have to be kind of a statewide map so that it could be distributed to all of our regional offices. Because anybody can go into any of our regional offices and get a COR, and they may not be aware of the restrictions or whatever in one particular region. And so they said that he said that they would work on something like that. So I assume it would be, and George might even know more. I don't know.
I guess my worry is that having worked with different districts, everything seems to change from district to district, and there doesn't seem to be any standard rules. And so I'm hoping that if they do that, that we're able to maybe work with them or help with them or talk with them about standardizing certain things.
So there are some rules that are in our rule that I think they will adhere to, and our rule was pretty specific. So you couldn't be within a mile of a campground or well-used drainages. I think it prohibits bait stations within wilderness areas and that type of thing, and I think that stuff will all still apply. I'm just not exactly sure what we'll get for guidance for us on Forest Service lands.
Yeah, and we're not too sure what we're going to give for guidance at this point yet. I don't think we've made a decision. The policy that we have is an old policy. It dates back to 1994. We as an agency probably should have revised that here recently, within the last couple of years or whatever, and come out with the new version of that. So we basically have two options with the Forest Service. One, the policy allows local line officers at the district and forest level to issue a closure order, a former closure order that would close areas to baiting. And again, following whatever criteria, distance from a campground, distance from a trailhead, high-use public trail or whatever. Or we can go with the option of providing a map and to the DWR with the hopes that those areas that we don't want baiting on would be followed. So as an agency, and at least on the Uinta Wasatch Cache, we have not made that determination which of those two options we're going to take at this time. So that's kind of where we're at with that.
And as far as the division goes, we still plan to continue to provide the Forest Service with copies of the CORs and things like that that have been issued like we always have in the past. So they'll be aware of where we issue baiting permits for.
Any questions? Ben?
Yeah, a couple things, Leslie. So concerning that San Juan LaSalle fall seasons, just a quick correction. I looked up the guidebook for this year, and the season did not change this year. It did end September 11th on that early season on those two units.
Okay, I'll have to. I was pretty sure the board changed that.
Yeah, I'm looking at the 2015 guidebook.
Okay.
Okay. I was excited. I thought, they missed it.
I thought they did because I swore I had to change that, but maybe not. Even better.
I'd love
the way the boat went down. Sorry, Ben. When the boat went down, it went through that way. But when the guidebook came out, I was the first one looking. I thought, dang God, they reverted back, so I didn't change.
Maybe that was my error.
Yeah, and I don't remember the
sorry,
boat
guys.
Going in favor of it either. But anyway,
it wasn't in her presentation last year at all to have those.
It was right. An outside recommendation, and it was a board motion. But I might have missed it when I. Bad on me.
Okay, and then the next thing is in 2015 we had on the summer season the pre-bait. We had 2 weeks for pre-baiting. You're recommending 1 week for these recommendations.
The original recommendation was for 2 weeks, but the board voted for 1 week, and we're only asking for the 1 week.
No, the original recommendation was for 1 week, and the board voted for 2 weeks.
Are you sure? Because I'm pretty sure
there was a two-week pre-baiting period this year on the summer season.
I think it's only one.
It was two. I guarantee it. I'll find it in the guidebook if you'd like me to.
Because I am pretty sure. Which page is
it? What's that?
It was only one. The original recommendation was for two, and they went with one.
I'm going to disagree. There is one
recommendation
for one.
On page 31, you can begin baiting on May 23rd, but you cannot hunt or harvest a bear until June 6th.
And that was 2 weeks.
Okay.
So would you consider revising
our recommendation is for 1 week prior to the
season. Okay, we'll go with that recommendation, and we can change that if you'd like. Okay. Any other questions from the right? Okay. Questions from the audience? Come on up. State your name.
Sorry, Leslie. I'm not going to get you in trouble. I'm perplexed, sorry, Ben, but why, I mean, if the original plan was to separate those two seasons, here's my question. Why even have an overlapping week? You have 4 weeks, Ben, to bait a bear. I could bait 1,000 bears in 1 week. So why, if the original plan was to separate, to say we don't want houndman running off bait and we don't want, you know, baiters having that conflict, why even have the overlap?
Have you baited a bear before?
Yeah.
Okay.
And that's right in the prime of all the rut and everything. Okay. For a whole month.
Let me ask you this. I if you want a complete separation, I'd be okay with that if we split the seasons 50-50.
Permit numbers?
No, I was meaning season dates.
What, as far as what?
Currently, the spring season gets 9 weeks, and the summer season gets 4 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
If you'd like to
I'll trade across. We'll take total no snow, great access for the houndman, and you can have the first 9 weeks where there's no access. I ride a million miles on horses. I'll trade you straight across right now. You can have the trunk chair. I'm just saying.
And we can have that conversation.
No, I'm not trading. I'm just saying it. For me, that was the big deal, is we wanted to eliminate conflict. Well, we know that you guys have the best part of that season. Let's eliminate the conflict altogether, and I think you'll still do fine at heart.
Okay.
Leslie can answer why.
Do you have any other questions?
Yeah, that was my
only
question.
Okay, we'll get the comments here. Okay. Lee, you have a question?
Lee Tracy, United Wildlife Cooperative. You just mentioned an arrangement you have with the Forest Service. Do you have such an arrangement with the BLM?
No.
Yeah, the BLM, we didn't change any of the rule regarding the BLM, and so we'll still require the somebody wanting to establish a bait station to get permission from the BLM before they can place it.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions? Troy, come on up.
Yeah, Troy Jessenson, Sportsman Fish and Wildlife. Leslie, has the division ever considered bringing bears into the CWMU program? Come on, don't breathe sigh. You're all right. And here's the reason I asked. As a CWMU operator up Chalk Creek, I have multiple bears that are killed by ADC, whatever you type, their problem bears. It would be beneficial, obviously, as a sheep operation there, they don't want them there. And so it's difficult to bring in hunters from all different directions. It would make it very simple if we had that available in the CWMU program.
So several years ago, we did this with cougars, I'm pretty sure, and offered CWMU cougar permits. And I know we've offered turkey permits, and I know it's been a headache as far as turkey permits go. The only thing that I could say with regard to bear permits is that it makes it really difficult when we start parsing out permits and getting into different programs, because we offer so few permits already for some of these seasons for bears. Whatever we do here, you're going to take away from the public and put it into the CWMU program.
Well, that's where I have a question with, because those bears are going to get removed anyway. They're going to be killed because if they are interacting with livestock, they're gone. So why would we need to take from that? You're actually removing the problem of these landowners don't want them there.
Because we don't know that you're going to... I mean, it's... We could do something like that, but it's going to require a lot of rule change and a lot of thought, because when you do that, we offer so few permits that you're going to be taking away from the public pool here. I mean, right now, if a CWMU operator wants somebody with a bear permit, they can get somebody with a bear permit to come onto their lands without it. You don't have to have a CWMU bear permit to go on the property.
Yeah, I see it a different way. I think it's a way to increase opportunity for the sportsmen and to handle a problem. Once again, to move it from an animal being removed by government to individual.
What would you do with something like the Fillmore Pavant, where we offer only two permits, and you have 5 CWMUs, and each CWMU wants at least 1 bear permit?
Well, are they removing bears there?
I mean, you're asking to create a depredation permit, a depredation private land permit. And we already have depredation permits that deal with livestock depredation, that deal with crop depredation. I mean, we have an avenue to do that if the landowner's having issues. It doesn't have to be Wildlife Services take. But if you start establishing CWMU, you're going to be taking out of this pot. Because there's only so many permits we can issue without hurting the bear population. It's not like deer or elk where you have several thousand. You're talking 4,100 minimum in the entire state.
We're just going to have to disagree.
We can talk about it. I don't want it to go through here now.
What I'm asking is, would they consider that?
We can consider it and sit down
and talk to it, because I think there's some merit to it. I mean, because there is no quota or, hey, as a livestock producer, you can only kill so many. They're going to kill them until there's not a problem. Whether it exceeds how many bears you have in that area or not, if there is bears depredating on those, they're going to continue to kill them.
Yeah, but you're asking to say that we know that we can talk about it, not here. I'll consider it, but like I'm saying, in some of these units, you have so few bears that you're taking from the public when you do that. And right now, if you draw a permit and a landowner has an issue, the first thing that we do is go to that list of people with permits and we call them and ask them to come and get that bear off of that property.
We'll talk about that later.
Okay, let's
one other quick question, and it's geared towards the Forest Service. Having hunted bears in Idaho and baiting, is there any standardization between acquiring a bait permit just on Forest Service ground? Because when I go to Idaho, they give me 3 tags. I don't have to tell the Forest Service where I'm baiting or whatever. It's go as long as your tag's on that. You don't have the problems that we face here or the restrictions here in the state. Why is the discrepancy between it as a federal organization?
Well, I think the difference, at least for us here in Utah and on the Wasatch Cache, is just the number of people that are out on the national forest. Okay. If you look at the visitors from the Uinta Wasatch Cache, we have more visitors in the 5 national forests in Utah combined. Just this one.
So it's population based then?
It's just trying to reduce human conflict, bear conflict. That's mainly the
plan. All right. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks. Okay. Any other questions? Okay. Any comments? Everybody got their cards in that wants to speak. Let's go ahead. I got 3 of them here. We'll start with Chad Colburn and then Lee Tracy. So, Chad, come up to the mic. Come over to this one over here if you can.
I'll behave.
No, I think Leslie did a great job on the plan. It's worked. It avoided the conflict. Ben, I agree with you. I mean, if there's conflict, let's get rid of all of it. But it's reduced that as far as the depredation. When you're talking depredation, I don't want an amateur or a sportsman when I got a problem eating my sheep. I want a professional right there to take care of it. I don't want a sportsman. There's a difference between when Luke Osborne shows up and when a kid of 19 shows up. I want problems. I think that's a bad line to cross. Is taking sportsmen and handling depredation. But what we did with the opportunity to harvest, it worked. The whole plan's good. I think you ought to accept it the way it's presented.
Thank you. Lee? And Dan Cockane will be up next.
Lee Tracy, United Wildlife Cooperative. UWC is supportive of the presentation as presented. I've had opportunities to work with Leslie and Chad on other predator committees, and in fact, Leslie helped us with the deer transplant down in Parowan Front, and I trust her judgment, and it sounds like that committee was a good committee and came up with a good plan, and we support it as is.
Okay. Thanks, Lee. Dan, and then Troy Justison.
Dan Cockane, Utah Houndsman. We had an opportunity to discuss this with Leslie before some of the changes were done on the book cliff. So the letter that we sent you reflected that. But I just want to say that we appreciate the opportunity to work through these issues before we come here and we support the plan as it is proposed. And we didn't notice that, but we didn't have a problem with the 2 week. I don't know of conflicts with bait hunters and hound hunters, so that's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you. Troy?
Yeah, Troy Justice in the Sportsman Fish and Wildlife. We support the plan as proposed, excluding going back. We'd like to see it added back into our 2 weeks pre-baiting.
Okay. So. Thank you. Any other comments? Okay. Seeing none, we'll bring it back to the board. Any comments?
Yeah, I'd just like to address Troy in talking about the bears on a CWMU. I've hunted up in that Chalk Creek area. I have friends who actually had a bait in there, had 9 different bears hitting the bait stand. I think there's a lot more bears in there than people ever want to admit there are in there. I think the problem that you run into is that when you have a unit that's majority of private land, how many people are actually aggressively going after those bear permits? Because if you don't have permission to hunt the land anyway, you're not going to go after that. And so I'm not sure if there's a way in the future to look at something and say, okay, you have the Chalk Creek unit, you have these number of CWMUs, would you be interested in doing that to help make that objective instead of having somebody professionally go in and kill them? If they could guide them and put it back in sportsman's hand, which we wanted to do originally anyway, I can understand maybe his logic on that a little bit myself. So from that standpoint, I realize it opens a Pandora's box in other parts of the state, and so it'd have to be worded where it would have to be. But I think the Chalk Creek area is fairly unique in the fact that the majority of it's privately owned.
Just to show you what I'm talking about, though, so the Chalk Creek, Camas, North Slope, Summit, all of those units combined, total, we issue 17 permits. So if you start parsing out individual units, you're taking from this pool because it's not in addition. It's based on the age and sex and all of that in the harvest. So when you start doing that, you're taking that out of the public pool.
I think I understand that, but I've drawn that tag twice and turned it in because of conflicts not being able to hunt in the area. And so from that standpoint, you still have an access problem. And I guess that's why I look at it from the public's point of view, is the fact is that I think there's more bears in there than the 17 can actually hold anyway, because I'm not sure we really know how many bears are in that area. I just know from a friend who hunted it how many were hitting his bait. I mean, so it seemed to be quite a few bears in that area. And so I guess the point that I look at is that I don't think you can make it exclusively CWMU. There's a few of those ranches that are still open that are under that. But I'm not sure what the percentage of that actually have people that go on and hunt bear on their property. I don't know that number.
We can look at it. It's not something we have to do tonight, but we'll look at it.
Any other comments? Ben?
Yeah, I'd like to address this issue of so-called conflict. For decades, we've been hunting spring seasons combined, hounds and baiting. I recognize there's been some conflicts. We have overlapping deer hunts and elk hunts. We have overlapping bear hunts in the fall. We still, with these recommendations, and this year had overlapping hound and baiting seasons in the fall. As we just heard from Dan, from the houndsman, he's not aware of any issues from this week from a 2 week pre-baiting season. I'm not aware of any issues. I think these, I acknowledge there have been some conflicts, but I think they've been way blown out of proportion. You know, prior to this year in the spring, we had, 8-9 weeks of pure overlap. To ask for a 2 week overlap, I do not think is a stretch by any imagination. Last year, this rack had an appetite, as well as many other racks, to do a 2 week overlap of hunting of the spring and summer. And I would ask that this rack considers that again this year. we sent that recommend this RAC sent that recommendation to the board last year. Again, nobody's raised the issue of conflicts in the fall running hounds and bait at the same time. So why in the spring and summer? And with that, I would make the motion to extend that summer season forward 2 weeks of hunting. So to start, let me grab a calendar. To start on May 21st. And that would provide a 2 week overlap of the hound, of the spring hound season and the summer bait season.
The hunt or
the
bait?
The hunt. To hunt, yes.
Along with pre-baiting.
If we added 2 weeks of the hunting season, I would not ask for the pre-baiting in front of that. Just to start hunting on May 21st.
Got that, Amanda? We're okay.
Got a second.
Do we have a second on the motion?
Could we have a little discussion before we?
Sure.
Well, it might be dead, but I want before I action that. I just wanted to talk a little bit, or ask you, Leslie, if you could talk a little more about that. I know we've got several organizations that have essentially contributed to the current recommendations, and we've got buy-off with the exception of you know, Troy asked for 2 weeks of pre-baiting, which is a little different than what you're asking for, because you're asking for 2 weeks of overlap hunting. Could you just talk a little bit more about where the current recommendations came from and why came to that conclusion?
So originally, and it was not on every unit, but in particular in the northeastern region, they had several problems with people running. There is a perception that people were running hounds off of bait. There's also, and quite honestly, if you know where bait is and you're baiting, a bear's going to go in there. Okay, that's just. If there's a bear there and there's bait there, it's going to find it. If you have hounds and it picks up the scent, you may be starting off at the same place. So there's a perception that they used my bait station, they harvested my bear that I was working on my bait station. Okay, and in some cases in particular, I believe it was on the San Juan, there were guns pulled and there were some threats that were made, and it was de-escalated and things like that. But it is quite passionate. You guys may not get the calls, but I did get calls this year. I got 5. I can give you the names if you'd like them. But there were 5 people at least on the Wasatch West that were complaining. Some of the complaints that I got were that because houndsmen can't use bait, now they're throwing pizza out the window, and then they're going back. Some of the other complaints are that they're using cameras, and the camera texts them when the bear comes in, and so then they go and run it off of this pizza that they threw out with this camera, even though they're not establishing legal bait stations. The other ones that I got, a guy put his bait station out the 2 weeks prior, and a hound guy ran off of his bait station. There's another one that says he has pictures of people running off of his bait station. So, I mean, we're trying to eliminate that. Yeah, the fall season doesn't get as much pressure. Everybody's not after. I mean, the bears are fresh out of their dens. They're easier to bait in the spring than they are in the fall, by far. And so we don't have quite the conflict that we have in the fall that we have in the spring with the bait. Everybody wants that 2 week period in June. Mm-hmm. So we split the 2 week period in June in half, and we gave 1 week to the hounds and 1 week to the bait.
Did you notice this last year a reduction in conflicts?
Yeah, I mean, those conflicts that I just mentioned were the conflicts, the calls that I got this year. There were a few people. I mean, most of it was on the Wasatch West this last year.
But did that reduce from previous years where?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Okay, we have a motion. Do we have a second? Any other discussion? Motion dies for lack of a second. Okay. I'll entertain any other motions.
I'll go ahead and make the alternate motion then that we allow 2 weeks pre-abating. So rather than 1 week as being proposed, we allow 2 weeks, which is what was approved for 2015 and what the hunt structure was for 2015.
Okay. Got a second by Carl. Okay. Do you want to discuss
that? Ask one more. Yeah. So do you have a lot of anxiety over 2 weeks versus 1 week pre-baiting?
No, we're just trying to reduce the overlap.
Just trying to further reduce that.
Yeah, that was the whole reason behind splitting it in the first place. If it went 2 weeks, it would be fine. I mean, it went fine. There was that two. I mean, there is still
some conflict.
Some conflict, but by not allowing the bait hunter to hunt for those 2 weeks. It could just be that the hounds ran through there and they're not actually hunting off of somebody's bait.
Okay. Thank you.
And, Chris, the reason that I ask for the pre-baiting season is because starting a bear hunt on June 4th, is it? Is extremely late in the year to be starting to start baiting. Baiting a bear is extremely time and labor intensive. A four-week season to bait a bear is extremely short. That two-week pre-baiting helps. It allows to have an established bait and potentially bears coming to that bait at the early enough in June that you can harvest before you start getting into too many rubbing issues. And through the third week of June or so, there's going to be some rubbed bears. Not a lot, but there will be some. The later you get into June, the more there's going to be. And so for me, it's critical to start, as early as we possibly can.
I guess my comment on that is the fact if you want to bait 2 weeks early and the houndsman actually comes across and attracts a bear that goes to your bait, isn't that kind of the cost of baiting 2 weeks early?
Yeah.
I mean, you can't stop a hound from smelling a bear. It has to go by the bait that's set up. And I guess it's advantage houndsman at that point since the bait's sitting there and got him on the deal. But I guess the point that I'm trying to make, if I'm the one baiting and I know I'm pre-baiting and there's a hunt going on, there's got to be a risk that that possibly hounds might pick up on your bait because they're out hunting right now and they're actively hunting, and you really can't shorten their season because that's what they're hunting. So I guess the conflict I look at is the fact is because you put a bait up doesn't guarantee you that something's not going to, come across your bait.
Yeah, it's just like setting a tree stand on a wall for an elk.
Exactly. And so I guess the point that I look at is the fact is that as long as the people baiting know that the fact is that may happen, I mean, I don't understand where the conflict is at that point because you went out there and you set up your bait stand and you want to set it up an extra week early. You may aid the houndsman, but you're not going to necessarily – you can't get mad at the houndsman for the hounds finding your bait.
I'll just tell you, the maddest guy, one of the maddest people that I ever dealt with this year about this was madder than mad because the houndsman took his bear. And he had a picture of it on his camera, and the hounds, he could see the hounds on his camera, and they took his bear over his bait. So I'm just going to tell you that was on the Wasatch West.
A hunter that draws a summer tag, knows these season dates going into it, and if they want to completely eliminate that potential for conflict, they could wait until June 4th, that's the hunter's prerogative. Personally, as an experienced bear hunter, I'd rather take that risk and have my bait out early. And you know what? If a houndsman runs off of it or a hound runs across it, that's just part of the game. We're talking about public land here for the most part. And for some additional context, last year I met with several conservation organizations, including the Houndsman Association, and we all agreed that a two-week overlap was really a non-issue. So.
Well, logic seems to say that if anybody'd have an issue with it, it'd be houndsmen. And if they don't have an issue with it, just to your point, you know, bait hunters don't have to be out there 2 weeks early. They have the opportunity if they want to. I mean, I don't see any logic behind not having it 2 weeks, especially since it's a drastic reduction in overlap of what it's been previously anyway.
Well, I think we have conflicts in all kinds of hunting, whether it be just bears or anything. And I think that's just the part of hunting or fishing is there's always a conflict. There's always going to be a conflict in some cases. And the hunters just need to man up, you know, and you can cry about anything. But
the bear baiters, they cry more than the mountains.
Yeah, you...
They're the biggest issue we have on Forest Service land are there the baiters, man. I'll tell you that right now.
Well, I think the two-week pre-baiting is a great idea.
Okay, we had a motion and a second. Okay. Who gave the second? I can't remember who it was.
Two hands.
Oh, I didn't see. Okay. Ken or... Yeah, Ken. Okay. And Leslie, when you get those mad phone calls, just you know who to blame it on.
Okay? Ben.
7-2.
Okay. Okay, we have a... motion and a second. All in favor of the motion? Okay, 9 in favor. All opposed? 2. Okay.
Thank you.
9 in favor, 2.
Thanks for bearing with my mistakes.
But that was just a portion. We got to do the balance.
We got to do the balance, Leslie. So, okay, I'll entertain a motion for.
I'll go ahead and make a motion to approve the rest of the black bear recommendations as proposed.
Okay, I have a second. Ken, second. Okay, all in favor? Any opposed? Okay, looks unanimous. Okay. Okay, thank you, Leslie.
Thanks.
We have Sheeprock Mountain, Greater Sage Grouse Translocation. Avery Cook.
It's got one more to go.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, look down underneath that.
That was freaky fast, right? Almost a Jimmy John's.
All right, I'm Avery Cook, the Upland Game Project leader for the Utah Division of Wildlife. I'll be talking about the Sheeprock Mountain sage grouse management area, sage grouse population augmentation. A little background on the Sheeprock sage grouse population in the area and just sage grouse in general. So, just recently in September, the Fish and Wildlife Service found sage grouse were not warranted for listing under the Endangered Species Act. However, the Sheeprock Mountain sage grouse management area population is still critically low. The rest of the sage grouse populations we've got in the state are doing much better. This transplant would be in addition to habitat improvements that are planned and ongoing in the sage grouse management area. And since sage grouse are a state-sensitive species, before the Division of Wildlife does a transplant, there's some additional requirements that we are required to meet. The first one is developing a management plan for sage grouse. We have a management plan in place. The transplant has to go through the RDCC. That process is complete, and we did not have any comments from the RDCC. And the final step is to get the RAC and board approval for the transplant. So the overview of the transplant, we're proposing to move birds during breeding season, so during the lekking season, which should be in March or April, depending on weather, primarily is what would affect the exact dates of when the transplant would happen. We would be capturing on the leks. we'd be following guidelines that were developed in past successful transplants, primarily the transplant in the Strawberry Valley, where birds were moved into Strawberry from other areas in Utah that was quite successful in recovering that population. We would transport and release the sage grouse in the same night, so we wouldn't be holding them over a day. We'd release on active plex in the core areas of the sheeprock sage grouse management area. We found in the past that when you release sage grouse, it's critical to put them in areas where there's other sage grouse lekking so that they stay put and kind of integrate into the resident population. We are providing predator control going into the transplant effort, and there's quite a bit of additional habitat work planned and ongoing. Propose 3 years of transplants with 30 females and 10 males transplanted each year in 2016, 2017, 2018. We will be monitoring the success of the transplants, looking at both the survival of the transplanted birds relative to resident birds, and also looking at sage grouse use of the habitat treatments in the area. We're planning on taking sage grouse from the Parker Mountain and or Box Elder sage grouse management area. These areas are genetically similar to the sheeprocks. They are robust populations. Both of those are some of our bigger populations in the state. And they're also geographically relatively close, making the logistics doable, moving those birds, capturing and moving the birds in the same night. Just kind of a little bit background on the population status throughout the state and the sheeprocks for some background on why we're doing this. If you look at that top graph, since 2012, if you on a statewide basis, so looking at all the SGMAs, our population have been on an uptrend, and we're getting close to the total number of birds counted at our last peak. However, on the sheeprocks SGMA, since 2012, we've had a continued downward trend, and we're reaching a critical level where we're worried about losing the population. So this transplant will boost the population and hopefully give us some time for the other habitat improvement measures to take effect. To give you an idea of the scale of movement, of what we're taking out of the other populations, the left bar is representing the number of birds we estimate to be in the Box Elder SGMA, which is 3,129. Parker Mountain, we're estimating there are 3,900 birds, and we're going to be taking 40 collectively from those two SGMAs, so roughly 0.5% taken from those two populations and moved to the sage, to the sheeprocks. That's the end.
Thanks, Avery. I have a question. Why, do you know why the decline in the sheeprocks?
It's kind of a death by a thousand cuts. There's a number of factors. Habitat loss due to invasive plants, and habitat loss with pinyon juniper encroachment, disturbance from recreation, predation. Basically, they hit almost all of the risk factors we've identified.
Are you going to be able to somehow mitigate those problems? Or?
Yeah, we've got quite a bit of funding and projects that are both ongoing and planned in the future. The biggest chunk of that habitat improvement is PJ removal. Sage grouse are really easily displaced from otherwise suitable habitat, other sagebrush habitat, so we can go in and remove the encroaching pinyon juniper trees and open up a lot more habitat that those birds can use to expand their populations. And we've got a contract with Wildlife Services to be going in there for predator removal.
Okay. Okay. Any questions from the RAC then?
I got two of them. One, Do you do any predator control before you put these birds in there?
There has been some ongoing predator control, and we're going to be ramping up the predator control as we put the birds in, so yes.
Okay, and the second one is when you take the birds this time of year and translocate them, how does that affect their nesting for that year?
It's typically before the nesting period. Generally, first year transplant birds have slightly different nest initiation and success than resident birds. But it's similar, and as they are there longer, it improves. But yeah.
Any other questions? Okay, questions from the audience? Anyone? Okay. Any comments from the audience? Okay. Seeing none, bring it back to the rack for your disposition. Any comments?
I'll go ahead and make a motion, Richard, to accept the proposals, the sage-grouse translocation as presented.
Okay.
And I'll second it.
Okay. Got a motion and a second to accept the presentation as presented. All in favor? Okay. Any opposed? Okay. Votes unanimous. Okay. Entertain a motion to let us leave.
Motion to adjourn.
Okay. Good. Thank you.